Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hola.
Bonjour.
Ni hao.
Guten Tag.
Moi.
Let's do it again.
Why'd you go for the one what's not there?
I don't know. Okay. All right, I'm ready.
Welcome to the Normal, Not Normal podcast from me, Oliver Phelps.
And me, James Phelps.
As identical twins who grew up on the set of Harry Potter, you could say that we didn't have the most normal start to life.
But recently, we've been thinking, what is normal anyway?
So, in this series, we're talking to friends, colleagues, and personal heroes.
To actually ask the question, what is their version of normal? And does normal even exist?
I suppose you could say perhaps we're all a bit not normal.
Yep, you're definitely not normal, Oliver. But I hope you're proud of it.
Well, you're the one in there looking like you work in NASA Mission Control with your rocket in the background and your headphones on and pictures of stars in the background.
That will always be the dream. Anyway, today we are talking to a good friend of ours who a lot of you will know from the Potter films. She came in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire as Cho Chang, who went on to be Harry Potter's first love interest. But since then, she's gone on to do some amazing stuff, played actually Jackie Chan's daughter. I'm very jealous of that one. But she's also gone on to also raise thousands of pounds for charity. She's a great photographer, a great person, a great artist. So welcome, Katie Leung.
Thanks again for saying yes to doing this.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I thought we'd start with just explaining exactly what we're trying to talk about. The main notion is normal, not normal.
Yes.
Well, it took me many, many years to come to this conclusion that there's no such thing as a normal life. So like your idea of normal is completely different to my normal. So just trying to work out what is your individual normal.
What?
Are you confused yet?
I'm confused how many times you said normal.
Go on, James, you try and explain it then.
You said normal about 20 times during that whole thing.
Yeah, because I'm trying to normalise it.
That's the whole point. The point is there isn't a normal. Everyone's is different in their own individual way without getting all...
Yes. So what the question is, what do I define as normal? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Well, that is exactly what I mean. Well done, Katie. Yeah, well done. You get 10 points. All right.
Yes. So is that 10 points for Ravenclaw or...
Oh, I didn't say long ago. So in terms of like normal between us, we were all in the Harry Potter films. So that would be a normal trait. Normal days for us would be going to Leeson Studios and dressing up like school kids for a while. But pre-Potter... What would you say would be your normal lifestyle?
So my normal was, just getting up in the morning and going to school, going to classes, and then playing video games with my brother when I got home until we both fell asleep holding the controller, and then, well, you know, eating in between, obviously, but that's boring. And then getting up in the morning and doing the same thing again. That's my memory of being at school.
In Glasgow?
Just on the outskirts of Glasgow.
And were you always into acting, or was it something that you just fell into?
It was something I fell into. Because we didn't have acting at school. You know, we had like, you know, the nativity play at Christmas, you know, at primary school. And then in high school, it wasn't a course that you could take. You know, it wasn't a subject.
Okay.
There was no drama.
So how did you find out about the films, like the audition process or anything like that?
So my dad saw a casting call on the Chinese channel, the one Chinese channel that we had. And after the news, they always have this kind of like news bulletin about what's going on across the UK, you know, within the Chinese community and how you can get involved and all these kinds of things. And the open audition came up for Cho Chang. It said specifically they were looking for a 16-year-old Asian girl. And if we were interested, then we should go to this open audition at Pineapple Studios in London. And it was on a Saturday because it was my dad's day off work. And I remember him coming into the dining room while I was doing my art homework. And he was like, do you want to go to this open audition for one of the Harry Potter films? And I was like, no. It's like, what? That, why would you even ask me such a ridiculous question? Like, I've never acted. And he's like, oh, come on. It will be a nice kind of trip, you know, little bonding sesh with father and daughter. So I was like, yeah, okay, fine. That's how it came about.
You went to the audition, and then what was it like? Because I remember when we went to our first audition.
It was pandemonium.
Yeah.
It was the best way to describe it, organised chaos.
Exactly, and it was, I think like you, we hadn't had any acting experience. Right. We always tell the story that the couple of months before the main audition was when you select what you're going to do for your GCSEs, so when you're 14, 15, 16, like your final years of high school. Mm. And the drama teacher said to us, don't do drama because you're not going to have a career in it. And then 2 months later, we're at a audition for Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I was wondering, was that like when you went to yours, were there a lot of drama kids there, as it were, like all from acting school and that kind of stuff?
Well, the first audition, like I didn't know anyone because it was just a queue of people, so I didn't really get to know what, you know, what kind of people that, in fact, you know, in this queue there were people of all ages and races, and I was just like, am I in the right place? Because by this point, like, everybody just wanted to be a part of it, right? So people were just kind of like trying their luck, even though they did not fit the description of Cho Chang. So I think the casting directors, they wanted to see everybody, you know, because people had traveled from like everywhere, like all over the world to be a part of, to be, well, to try their luck. And I think they were just being super kind. So they were actually just letting everybody into the studios. And it wasn't until towards the end of the day when they realized that the queue was just so huge, they did have to start turning people away. By the time we got in there, after about 4 hours of, it wasn't 4 hours, it was a whole day of queuing actually, we were in there for like 10 minutes. And they just took a photo of us in kind of small groups and then said, just, you know, we'll give you a call if we want to see you again. So it wasn't until I kind of went back down again for like kind of drama workshops and, you know, the second and third round of auditions that I came across girls my age, you know, slightly younger, older, who I assumed did have training. Did have some form of training, because they just seemed to be so comfortable in that kind of setup.
In terms of then of getting the call and then joining the cast and that, I'm trying to remember, but had we already done the read-through at that point, or is it just before filming had started?
Yeah, I remember being there for the read-through, because I didn't even know what a read-through was. And I was so overwhelmed.
What was it like for you coming to, obviously, it was the fourth film, The Goblet of Fire, that you came in on.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? Was it like joining a new school? Did you that a kind of experience of...
Absolutely.
Obviously, all the crew know each other, all the cast knew everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, I had the school that I was going to when I joined the films, I was also a new girl, because I came into the school like 2 months after everybody had already started first year of high school. So, and that did not feel good. And I think maybe like the trauma from that made it like even more overwhelming joining the cast. Well, having said that, because the fourth film, there were loads of new characters, so I wasn't the only one. So, yeah. You know, there was like Robert Pattinson and Clement and Stan. Stanislav.
Yeah, because I remember when that, I remember when you guys all came in, it was almost like for James and I especially, we'd always been, I suppose, the older of the younger cast. So then we suddenly had a load more guys who were our age, and it just seemed to make it... I remember the fourth film being almost like a step up in, I wouldn't say maturity, but just in terms of like socially, because we'd do so much, all being of that age group, whatever, you know, be it going out for meals, going out bars, clubbing, whatever like that, that there was that, there was definitely more of a camaraderie, or an enhanced camaraderie with something for you guys.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I mean, like, I remember being so intimidated and just really overwhelmed by the whole experience. And I do remember vividly, like, feeling a sense of, like, comfort when I was around you guys. And I don't know if that was... You're like, what?
False sense.
Well, because you're smarter.
Yeah.
But no, I don't know if that was like a kind of gradual development that kind of brought me to that place. But I did feel that I could just be myself when I was like around you guys. So that was really nice. So thank you.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah.
When we're filming, so we do obviously like the, I always think about the Yule Ball, because that was the first time in the filming when we'd been there, they'd changed the Great Hall in any way. So they dressed it up to look all like that. Now, did you have, because we all had dancing lessons, which lasted for about 3 weeks, but on camera it lasted for all of about 0.2 of a second. Did you guys do any of that?
Yeah, we did. I remember it would have been the same as you guys. You know, they had the kind of... marquees like set up just downstairs from the dressing rooms, and then we just had like lessons you know, with the partner that you're dancing with, in my case it was Robert, and we did that. I mean, I'm not much of a dancer too, but like we had, you know, in Scotland you have your Christmas ceilidhs every year, so every Christmas the kind of PE lesson, physical education, becomes dancing lessons for the Christmas ceilidh.
You're not stereotyping at all here.
I was going to say, is this when all the guys turn up in kilts and there's log throwing or something like that? What goes on?
None of that. It's literally a Christmas disco with some amazing kind of ceilidh dancing.
But not only did you learn to dance in that, I remember did you do your paddy license as well?
A what license?
Your underwater.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, I did that, and it was...
Because I remember being very jealous of you guys.
Yeah, but then they just ended up using a dummy in the end. And I was like, what was the point? It looks nothing like me, and it looks like a dummy.
How long would you say you were underwater for, like, in terms of days?
It was like the dancing, you know. We spent ages training for it, and then I was in there for, I don't know, like... 3 hours, and then on screen I was underwater for like 0.2 seconds. Yeah, it was so pointless. But I remember, because it was kind of one of the first things that I had to do when I joined, and I remember the diving instructor, when he took me into this tank, he was like, you know, we're gonna go deeper and deeper, and you're gonna have to like alleviate the pressure from your ears as we go down. So you're gonna have to like kind of blow out every time, and then when you can feel it pop, you have to give me a thumbs up. But it wouldn't pop, and I was so anxious and nervous that I was like wasting his time or something, and I was. You know, so my ears wouldn't pop, and then I would just give him a thumbs up, and then we would go down. Yeah, aha. And it just like we reached the bottom, and at this point, my ears were just like, they were so painful. But still, I didn't say anything, because I was just like, oh yeah, I made it to the bottom. And he's like really happy and he's smiling, and I'm not going to tell him that my head's about to explode.
I was going to say, meanwhile, your head's growing and growing and growing.
Yeah, I know. So then we came out, we eventually came out of the tank and he was like, oh, how was that? I was like, yeah, that was fun, but my ears are a little bit sore. And then he got super worried. And then, you know, I got taken to the doctor straight away. And then I had a bruised ear.
Yeah, because it can be really dangerous that if you don't equalize on things. I remember once going scuba diving in the Barrier Reef, and we jumped in, and the instructor was like, right, okay, we're going to go down. And we got to about 10 meters or so, and my right ear just wouldn't equalize. This one wouldn't. And I kept doing it, and almost kept feeling like pressure behind my eye.
Yeah.
And I was going to the guy like, no, I'm going up, no. And he's going, no, calm down, we'll go. And in the end, I flipped him a gesture and just swam up to the top. So I thought, this isn't helping. Got onto the boat, took my mask off, and realized that my wife and a few of the other guys on the boat just staring at me like, what? Like, really in shock. And it turned out by doing, like, pressurizing so much and it not coming out of my ear, it actually relieved pressure behind my eye, and my eyeball had popped out its socket.
Oh,
to the point where else it's just like, and in hindsight, I just went, like, lit my hand and just, like, pushed it back in. And then afterwards, I was like, that's the weirdest thing I've ever. So ever since then, I've never wanted to go, wanted to do anything like that, because I suppose it's got to come out somewhere. But it looked really, well, in one way, I'm gutted I never got a photo of it, because I bet it looked really, really weird. But my wife assures me that it wasn't a good look for me.
Oh my God, that's awful.
So you did, at least that didn't happen on camera.
No, you're right.
So in terms of, like, when the films came out, did you notice life totally changed for you then?
I think actually the kind of the most abnormal thing to happen during that whole process and experience was the beginning. So when people found out that I was going to be in the films, and it was just such an invasion of, like, privacy, actually, because the media took hold of it, or they just found out, I don't know how, but they did, and then suddenly they were, like, at my house and kind of, you know, phoning my home telephone number and trying to get some form of gossip or whatever it was from like school friends or from family members. And I was just like, what is going on? This is nuts. And it wasn't very nice, actually. Yeah, and then with the kind of rise of the internet happening at the same time, on these fan sites as well, and me being a kind of 16-year-old, already insecure, going online to kind of check what people were saying, it was just really mad. And I think by the time the film, because, you know, it takes ages for the film to actually get released after filming. I think by that point, I'd kind of gotten used to it. The rest of the world finding out was the big shock, the thing that I couldn't get used to and I found very new.
Yeah, I guess also because, again, you, Stan, Rob, Clemence, you're like the first guys who were added to the cast, as it were. So maybe people were looking at that in regards to, that could have been me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially playing the love interest when, you know...
I can imagine.
I mean, it wasn't easy because the way that she's describing the books as well, she's, you know, she's popular and beautiful and all these things, and then people are judging me based on a picture of me taken by some paparazzi while I was, like, having a really day, and I'm, like, sitting on a bench outside Asda waiting for my dad to pick me up. And it was just like, it was awful. I was like, this is the worst picture that they could have taken. And then suddenly it was just like everywhere. And, you know, it was supposed to be a really exciting time, but actually it just made me so sad. It made me so upset. So it was just a really kind of weird mix of emotions.
Yeah. Do you think it was very much because you're succeeding, you're excelling in something, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we could go with it. Oh, what a great experience for these guys. These guys are going to add to it. Or we could just really just crap all over it. And it's a shame that more people take the second option.
Totally. I mean, it's just like, give us a chance. Like, we haven't done anything yet. You're literally just, you know, judging from the get-go.
I suppose the fifth film as well. Did you find that there was more of a bubble inclusion? Because obviously you'd already been there for quite a long time at that point, that you were able to... It made any difference to dealing with any of the negative stuff, or
no? I think I was like deep in it by the fifth one.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, because it really gets to you, doesn't it? So when Ivana came on board, Ivana Lynch, who plays Luna Lovegood, when she came into it, I just felt really protective of her because I didn't want.
So you two hit it off right away, right?
Yeah. And I was just like, I do not want the same thing to happen to her. And obviously it didn't, because she's like amazing. But when we did the fifth film, I was still, you know, I was still 19 or whatever it was. Still a bit insecure.
Obviously you'd have the kissing scene with Dan. During that, it was like a game. How quick would they ask that question?
I still get asked that question. Still.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm just like, just Google it. Just Google it, please. I mean, I guess my answer has changed over the years, but yeah.
We were talking actually earlier about stuff that we all did outside of filming. Mm-hmm. So one of them was, and I found some photographs.
Oh my goodness. Get that off.
That was taken.
Oh, you know where that is. Do you know where that is?
That in that goth club. Yes.
It was.
Yes.
So set the scene. We were in, for people listening, we were in Switzerland and we had this amazing premiere. Everything like was really good. Everyone was very welcoming and had such a blast. And as we're leaving, one of the guys there said, so where do you want to go tonight? So I said, oh, is any like metal clubs or anything like really hard rock? And the guy was like, yes, we can sort that out. And we turned up to this club where we've just come from the premiere. So
we're in suits.
We're pretty much all in suits.
And nice and dresses and stuff, yeah. And then, yeah, and it turns out to be a goth fetish night. And I remember the one song, which was just kept going, get ready, get ready. And there was a guy in what can be described as a frogman suit with a girl opposite him. And it kept saying, get ready. And then it said, get ready for suicide. At which point he smashes a bottle over his head and she starts licking his head. And I think that was when that photograph was taken, because before that point you were snapping photos at people.
Yes, I think I have that photo somewhere. The girl dressed like Bellatrix Lestrange.
Yes. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
There was a few odd. I say odd. Their normal is very probably different to my normal in that instance.
I remember it being a great night.
I remember it being a good night because it was just a case of, well, we're involved now.
Do you remember I flew to Birmingham to go clubbing with you guys?
Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't old enough.
Shh, you were.
Shh. No, you definitely weren't.
Because you guys had a membership or something for this club. And you're like, oh, just try and use this one to get in. Because I didn't have...
Definitely Oliver.
I didn't have an ID card.
It worked though, didn't it? It worked.
It worked. Yes.
In terms of like finishing the films and everything like that, so you said that you weren't too sure. Had you realised then that that's what you wanted to continue with acting, or did you think about the photography side of it and stuff like that?
Yeah. So I think like the photography came from us travelling and seeing incredible places and stuff, and also fearing that this would be it. You know, I was like, this kind of opportunity comes once in a lifetime. I can't expect for it to really happen again. So I was looking for a bit more stability, I guess, in my life, or at least pretending to. And then it wasn't until I was halfway through my photography course, I was like, well, photography is not any easier, actually, you know, it's still considered as part of the arts. And I was like, I don't want to do wedding photos and baby photos. Like, that's not my style. And then actually towards the end of that 4-year course, it just so happened that I got an audition for a stage show at the Young Vic. And yeah, and I got the part. And then as soon as I got on that stage, I was like, no, I want to act. I want to perform. And then I went back to drama school and did that for 3 years. I've been in like school half my life, basically, trying to figure out what I want to do, which is like a privilege in itself, I guess.
And have you found that they've been almost like a stereotyping in terms of the roles that they want you to read and stuff like that?
I mean, it's a bit better now. It's a bit better now. But I think, yeah, before drama school, coming out of drama school, it was always race specific. You know, she wasn't just Scottish. Mm. She wasn't just a Chinese girl who happened to be Chinese. It was always, I was Chinese for a reason, you know, and it's fine, you know, because it's at the beginning, it's fine because you're just trying to hone in on your kind of acting skills and you're just grateful to be offered a job or to get it. And then after a while, you're like, oh God, I don't want to do another show about politics in China. I'm like, I don't know anything about the politics in China, you know. I don't live there, you know. I'm just so it was just, it just felt a bit tedious, actually. So, but I know that things are kind of better now because of the discussions around diversity and inclusion and all these things. So I do definitely see a difference in the industry in terms of like casting and all that. But, you know, some of it still feels like a box ticking exercise, just trying to look like they're doing something, but not really. Yeah. So I think we've got a long way to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. What about you guys? What is it? What's it like for you?
In a way, I suppose, not to the same extent, but yeah, we're kind of like it's a twin role. Oh, they've got to speak at the exact same time, doing the exact same thing.
Right. Okay.
And when you get like that, it's like that doesn't happen. But then again, though, we've just finished doing something the other day.
Yeah, we just finished doing something. Hence why I've now had a haircut, where the writer and director is actually a twin.
Right.
So, and as a twin, looking at it, you could definitely tell just little things, like it was referred to as his brother, not his twin.
Mm. And the dynamic of them as well, isn't it?
It definitely helps. But yeah, I know what it's hard to know that they're not looking at you for just the character and they don't think.
Yeah, it's just mad that people can't see beyond or think of possibilities beyond what they see. Yeah, it's a real shame.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Sorry to interrupt this broadcast. It's Oliver from the future. Whey.
You sound really creepy. And this is James from the future. Whey.
Yeah, that sounds even better. Anyway, we're just adding a quick message because we want to invite you guys to get in touch and have a chance to be part of the podcast.
Now, if you have a brilliant did you know fact, I'd really like to hear that. But also, if you have any questions for us or a jingle you've written or a voice message, please send it in to us and we'll choose one or two to include in this section of the audio version of the podcast each week.
You can reach us in two ways. You can tweet us. Make sure you use the hashtag normal, not normal. Or if you're tweeting in a did you know fact, don't forget to also put, as well as the normal, not normal, hashtag did you know.
Yep. Or you could email us at normalnotnormalpodcast@gmail.com. That's normalnotnormalpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to let us know your name and where in the world you are from.
But don't worry, we'll still have time for James's did you know facts at the end of the show.
Rightly so. And after the last episode, we asked everyone to send us your versions of what your normal is to you. And we've picked a couple to share.
There was literally hundreds what came through. So apologies, first of all, if we didn't get to read out your message today, but we saw it and we really, really love the contribution from everybody. But here's one coming out. So this is from Sarah. And Sarah writes, 8 a.m, feed baby, get out of bed and have a nice cup of coffee. Relax until my two-year-old wakes up. Then it's go time all day until 12 a.m. in the process of fixing a two-month-old's sleeping schedule. So, any activity recommendations for a toddler? We're getting bored. James.
I'm the last person to give advice on parenting because I don't have a baby. I don't know what to do with any baby. But I remember I had to look after a friend's toddler a couple of years ago, and my way of looking after the baby was to play fetch.
Well, like a dog.
Yeah, pretty much. You'd roll the ball away and the baby would bring it back to you. It's amazing how it works.
Very good, very good. Right, okay, anyway, so that was Sarah's normal life. And Jazz sent us a message saying her normal, not normal, after my A-levels were cancelled this year, so A-levels are exams in Great Britain, I've ended up full-time in childcare. Not quite a helicopter pilot, but every day is dancing, crafts, and for most of our children with ASD, which is autism spectrum disorder, learning to communicate in a way they understand and appreciate. Rewarding, with a big heart smiley face emoji.
That's amazing. Jazz, thank you very much for sharing that one. That's like when you're going down one path and you end up going down another one, it's even better, isn't it?
It is. It is. Right. And then we've got, let's have another one here from Kira, who says, my normal, not normal, is taking care of my mum who suffered a bad accident last year and had to learn how to walk in a spinal unit. And taking care of my mental health and running every day helps. Kira, we're sending you nothing but love. Well done, mate, for being such a fantastic daughter as well. And hope your mum's doing very well.
Okay, I'll read one. I think I believe her name is Sarah. So thank you very much, Sarah. A normal day for me is exercising. Great. Coffee or tea. Amazing. Attending college classes, working, studying Japanese, and watching one of many Asian dramas on my list. And this is awesome. To add, we have 5 geckos. Sometimes I feed Pennywise, who's 1 gargoyle gecko. My sister mostly feeds them, but there are times Pennywise won't eat if my sister feeds her, so I have to.
Oh, naughty Pennywise, these geckos.
Wonder if you could play fetch with a gecko.
Well, I don't know. It sounds like Pennywise is quite temperamental, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But James, we just need to say to the guys, from next episode, we're going to release the audio podcast first on a Friday. Then the video on the YouTube channel will be released on the Monday, which will be slightly longer and less edited. The audience participation, you guys' participation with the whole, you know, the shout outs, the jingles, the questions, the did you know facts will be on the audio version only.
That's right. So audio version on the Friday, the YouTube version on the following Monday. So please enjoy whichever way you enjoyed this podcast. But now back to the episode with Katie.
In terms of like the platform, I suppose we'd say, from being in the films and stuff like that, has that allowed you to move into charities, or have you been able to do that at all?
I mean, I care deeply about kind of racial equality and female equality and, you know, feminism and injustices that are happening around the world and stuff. But I am the ambassador for a charity called the My Body Back Project, which is a charity that helps people who identify as women to help them recover from abuse whether that's physical or emotional.
Yeah, with the case of in lockdown, that there could have been more cases of it appearing because of that, being kind of close in confinement with a abusive partner or someone who they're exposed to. So, yeah, so things like that do become more prevalent, I suppose, maybe where it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, yeah, and there have definitely been more cases since lockdown.
Is there something you'd say to anyone who's been going through anything like that?
Telling someone, obviously, is the first step, and not everybody is in a place to do that, but those who can should. I think for a lot of people, it's not having the access to ask for help. It's just the shame around it or not knowing whether it is happening. Like for a lot of people, you know, there's like a lot of gaslighting going on and people don't know that it's happening to them. So I think a lot of the time we have all the information we need on the internet. And sometimes it is a case of like, educating yourself or reading up to kind of confirm your doubts or your fears about whether it is happening to you or not. And yeah, that's maybe even step one.
So after you finished studying drama and you went on to do some really cool projects,
yeah.
Very jealous that you worked with Jackie Chan, by the way.
Oh, right. Yes.
What's your highlight that you would want to do next? Like, have you got something, like a genre you'd like to work in, a story that you'd like to tell?
I mean, the thing is, like, I'm not very good at coming up with my own goals or a picture of what I'd like to do. I just know what I don't want to do.
Right.
So if you were to, like, lay out a couple of options for me, I could just be like, nope, nope, nope. Oh, this looks interesting. that's how I roll. Yeah, so I guess like something different from what I've done before. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of great stuff kind of on TV right now where, you know, it's showing so many different layers of what a woman is, and that's really that's amazing to me. You know, for example, Killing Eve. Mm-hmm. Jodie Comer's character Villanelle,
yeah.
Like that is, you know, I don't want to play a likable character. I just, you know, someone who's like just a bit badass and a bit mad and makes mistakes and not great decisions, but in the end, like through her vulnerability, yeah, you can find some kind of connection with her or resonate in like a universal way, one which doesn't require to be me to be of a certain race or whatever. So
sure.
I don't think I'm asking for much. Yeah.
Just a load of options for you to say no to.
Yes, exactly.
So you said that you're living with your cousin.
Yeah.
Tell us about the story with how you guys obviously are now living together, but also like how, because like you guys have only just recently reconnected, right?
Yeah, so Fiona, I call her Fee. She's from Glasgow. I'm from Glasgow. We didn't know each other, actually. We'd maybe met a couple of times at weddings, but I just knew she was the cousin with short hair. And she's 10 years older than me, 9, 10. So I guess we didn't kind of hang out because of the age difference as well. So we were friends on Facebook, and yeah, I was doing this play in London. I had just kind of posted something about how people should come and see if they're around. And I didn't realize she was living in London at the time. So she had messaged me and said, oh, I'll come and see your play. And I remember thinking, oh God, like, I'm so antisocial. You know?
Come and see my play.
And she knows this. She knows this. And I thought that because that same night Bonnie was coming to see the show, and I just get a bit nervous. I don't know if you guys have been in a similar situation, but when you've got like two sets of friends or two people who don't know each other, but they're your friends and they're meeting for the first time, that I always get a bit nervous about that because I'm like, oh, I want everybody to get on. And what if they don't like each other? What if they don't bond? Mm. So that was my fear, knowing that she was coming on the same night as Bonnie was. So then I was kind of dreading it. And then post-play performance, I went downstairs to meet the two of them, and they'd like hit it off. And Fee was just like kind of, you know, chatting away, and then, you know, yeah, they were fine without me, actually. And I was almost like, oh, should I interrupt? Yeah, so we kind of, you know, I caught up with Bonnie, and then she had to leave. So then Fee and I went into Chinatown and had like we just had dinner there. And we chatted like all night, to the point where the restaurant was closing and we got chucked out. And then since that night, we just kind of, every time I came to London, or, you know, if I was doing a play or filming or whatever, or for an audition, then we would just hang out and we'd meet up for dinner and drinks. And then eventually I decided I wanted to move out of Glasgow and try and spend a few years in London. And I asked her if she'd be up for moving in together. And that's how we've ended up here. But yeah, it's strange because, like, you know, we're cousins, and yet we kind of only just met like 4 years ago. So it's quite, and we hit it off straight away, and she's kind of like my best buddy now. So that's brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant.
We've actually got a quote from Fiona.
You do? What?
Which I don't know if you've heard before, but she says, apparently Katie does not like the look of her toes. She generally exhibits a high degree of grace and decorum and extreme aversion to germs and unsightly things like toes. However, they're undeniably beautiful. But she also likes sweet, cold leftover pizza.
Who doesn't?
Which is congealed rugby and slop to her.
Okay.
Is that about right?
Yes. Well, did you read that from her blog?
I think so.
Okay. That is so funny. Yeah, I have like a weird, like I have a birthmark on like my toe, which I used to get so, yeah, I was just so ashamed about it when I was growing up. And I would try and hide it, and I wouldn't wear like, kind of, now everyone's going to like look for this birthmark.
I'm actually doing that into the camera.
yeah, and I just got, I know, it's crazy now, like looking back, it was just like, now it's just like, I don't care, whatever. But back then it was just like, it was like debilitating, just trying to hide it.
I think that's something what a lot of people, I bet, who are listening could probably relate to in a way, that they like, maybe they are younger and they've got a birthmark, something what they're quite worried and there's no, it's bizarre, isn't it? Like the older you get, the less you care. Whether that's because you're more used to it or you realise that it doesn't define you.
Totally. And now I'm like so proud of it. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah. Or it does define me now, and I'm proud that it defines me in some way.
Yeah.
It's almost like I show them my birthmark before I tell them my name. Look.
She's got a t-shirt. Look at my...
Yeah. Oh God, she's got her feet out again. Yeah.
Yeah. So... yes, I do. I love leftover pizza. I mean, who doesn't? She's the weirdo. She's the one who's like, ew.
Do you microwave it though, or eat it cold?
No, I do like to eat it cold.
Ooh, okay.
No.
No, it's fine.
You're gonna tell me you like pineapple on it now as well, don't you?
I love pineapple.
Yes.
Hawaiian pizza.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Katie.
Come on. Although I'm a vegetarian now, so I don't. Yeah, I've not had it in a while.
But so in terms of like, what is less normal about yourself? Is there anything like where you say that you prefer to do, what you really like doing, which you would say may be a bit unusual?
I like awkwardness. I think a lot of people don't. I love when things get a bit awkward, because then I'm just kind of, because then I try and analyze like the situation. I'm like, okay, so why is it awkward? Maybe I should be a psychologist. I don't know, but I do like it when it's a bit awkward and yeah, when there's a bit of dead air.
Mm.
Like now.
But for the purpose of a podcast, let's not do that.
I enjoy my own company far too much. Like in a kind of almost unhealthy way.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that. It's. I remember when years ago I was going hiking in Northern California, and my pal was going to come with me. And literally the morning of, he had to cancelled because he had to work. Mm. And he was saying, "Well, I guess you can stay here and we'll hang out this evening." And I was like, "No, I'm going hiking, mate." Like, so I literally went into the Redwood Forest on my own for 3 days, which was great. I really enjoyed it because it was just nature and just hanging out. Although the ranger said to me, "Don't go off the trail because if you fall down, no one will find you for 6 months."
Wow, what a thing to say!
Because no one comes here for 6 months. So that was that. And then the first night, there was a raccoon trying to get into the tent.
What?
Which scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, I bet. Shit. What did you think it was?
I didn't know what it was. I thought it was like Sasquatch or something. And then I kind of opened the tent, and then you see this raccoon there. So I tried to like move him away, and I kind of like bitch slapped him a couple of times. It's just... But I didn't mean to, but it was...
You can have animal rights after you now.
Well, no, he was trying to get my food.
So, Katie, what would you say is coming... is coming up, like, is there anything you're excited to be getting up to?
Yeah, I mean, it's all up in the air at the moment. I'm doing a couple of like audio things, which I love. You know, I actually prefer it to being in front of a camera. There's just so much freedom.
Can you say what they are?
No. I can't. It's so secretive. It's even like worse than like, you know, when films tell you to be like really quiet about stuff. I don't know. I got in trouble once because I talked about it while I was doing another audio thing. I got in trouble and I was like, oh God, I've not been in trouble since I was in school.
So there's a top secret audio project.
Yes. Uh-huh. But it's really exciting, and I really enjoy kind of animation and all that kind of stuff because it's, like I said, there's just so much freedom. You can move around and you're in a booth on your own. you don't have to interact with other people. No. I really do enjoy it a lot. Other than that, it's just a really nice time to kind of not worry about work. I mean, I guess it's a very privileged position to be in, to not have to worry financially. But also I think it's just a nice time to be creative, like for your own sake, you know, just thinking of things that you want to do that doesn't involve like thinking about your career and where that's going to go and all that kind of stuff. So I've been like just painting and drawing and writing and reading and all that kind of stuff, and that makes me really happy. Just being able to connect with my family and like people I care about actually has been really rewarding. You know, talking about things that don't involve your work, you know, like your emotions and like mentally, how are we all doing? You know, how are you feeling? You know, that I think that those kinds of conversations we don't have enough of. And the minute you do start talking about it, you realize that you're not alone in those feelings, and that you sharing that information, that kind of vulnerable part of yourself, makes someone else feel less alone. I guess I always knew it, but then I didn't really apply it, because when you're in London, it's just so fast paced and everyone's doing their own thing. And when you're forced into this kind of situation, because I think we all have been, but I think once you get into the rhythm of it, it can be really nice. And I feel like I've gotten to know my parents a bit more just from FaceTime and seeing them when I can, going up to Scotland and seeing them as like individuals beyond them being my parents, I think is lovely. I think that's maybe a part of like growing up as well, but I think lockdown has sped up that process. What about you guys? How have you guys been dealing or coping with lockdown?
I've got to be completely honest, I've really enjoyed lockdown. Because it's the first time in, I've said it before, but it's the first time in over 10 years I haven't been away from home for such a long period of time. So just being able to hang out with my wife and my dog, and I got really into gardening.
Oh, you have?
Some rock and roll.
Nice.
And I grew loads of things from seed, which is actually really rewarding.
Okay. So tell, give us a list. I want to know.
I don't know what they are. There's like a yellow one, a green thing. There's
a grout. Wow. Yeah, you've really been paying attention to your gardening. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're all Latin. I didn't do Latin at school. So
what a horticulturist you are. Yeah.
I have these cards. It's like a game, but not really a game, but it's like they're more conversation starters. I mean, some of them are really uncomfortable questions, but
yeah,
once you can kind of get over that barrier, you're like, wow, I didn't know that about you. I actually have them like here. I don't know if it's worth like...
Doing one now? Go on, try me.
Yeah? Okay. What might your parents complain about in you?
Parents might complain about me is my brashness. I can be quite brash with things.
And then what do you, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, what do you mean? You're wrong. It'd probably be a case of, yes, I understand that. And I do sometimes try my best. But it's weird, like one of my pals, he keeps saying to me that he's realised that I don't suffer fools. I think it basically means that if someone's wasting time, you'll pull them up on it quite quickly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's a compliment or not.
I think it's a big part of the British culture. Do you know what I mean? It's like we're always kind of pussyfooting around the actual issue and just trying to be polite. But it's not like it's not real anyway. So why don't we just kind of get to the point, right?
Do James. Pick a card for James.
James. Oh, okay. What do you wish you could ideally tell your mother?
It's going to be a really boring answer, but I'm actually a mummy's boy, so I tell her quite a lot.
Okay, redraw.
You told her that you love her lately.
If I tell my mum, yeah.
You should definitely go into psychiatry, Katie.
Okay, sorry.
Thank you so much, Katie, for sharing your normal and not normal with us. Yeah, it's been really great catching up as well.
Thanks so much, guys. We could go on forever, really.
Anyway, we could, but thank you so much for joining us, Katie. Really enjoyed catching up.
Thank you.
Take care. Well, that was good fun, wasn't it?
Very good. I think what we found the last season was how we asked questions which we've never asked friends before. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, I really like the whole, I suppose, reminiscing over times when we were going out. One of my still most random nights out is that one in Switzerland.
That was a great club. They played good music in there, I thought.
Yeah, some of them were.
But speaking of Switzerland, I've got a did you know. Did you know, in Switzerland, it is illegal to only own one guinea pig.
Well, I suppose guinea pigs could get lonely, couldn't they?
Well, this is because they're social animals and they want a company of another guinea pig.
Okay.
Is that one? This is my favourite one.
Ooh.
Right. Did you know, if you stick your finger in your ear and move it up and down, it sounds like Pac-Man.
Oh, Christ. I hope that I'm not the only person who's listening to this right now doing the Pac-Man song. And this is definitely not normal behavior.
It's not. But guys, thank you very much for joining us this week. Thank you again to Katie for joining us. It's great catching up. I've been James Phelps.
He has been, and I have been Oliver Phelps. Guys, stay safe. And if you like this, please give us a like, give us a follow, subscribe, leave a really, really nice review. And if you didn't, it's probably because you weren't doing Pac-Man all the way through. But more importantly, guys, thank you so much for your support. We'll see you soon.
Bye. Normal, Not Normal is a Stable production.